Before we dive in, a quick note that this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is Zenflow Desk Organizers, the modular workspace system that adapts to your workflow needs, though Zenflow is completely made up for this show. Some details in our discussion might be inaccurate, so please verify anything important to you. I'm Marcus, and today we're exploring Simon Sinek's The Infinite Game with leadership consultant Elena Rodriguez. Elena, you've been applying these concepts with Fortune 500 companies for years. What initially drew you to this book?
What hooked me was how Sinek reframes everything we think we know about competition and success. Most business leaders are playing finite games, trying to win, beat competitors, hit quarterly numbers. But Sinek argues the most successful organizations play infinite games.
Let's clarify that distinction right away. What exactly is a finite versus infinite game?
A finite game has known players, fixed rules, and a clear endpoint where someone wins. Think football or chess. An infinite game has changing players, evolving rules, and the purpose is to keep playing, to perpetuate the game itself.
And Sinek's argument is that business is fundamentally an infinite game.
Exactly. There's no final winner in business. Companies come and go, markets evolve, new players enter constantly. The goal isn't to win business, it's to stay in business, to keep contributing value over time.
This builds on work by James Carsey, right? But why did Sinek feel business needed this perspective in 2019?
He saw too many companies destroying themselves with finite thinking. Quarterly earnings pressure, obsessing over competitors, cutting costs to boost short-term profits while undermining long-term health. Wells Fargo's fake account scandal is a perfect example.
How does Wells Fargo illustrate finite thinking?
They were playing to win against other banks by any means necessary. Employees created millions of unauthorized accounts to hit sales targets and beat competitors, but this finite mindset destroyed trust and nearly killed the company.
So what does infinite thinking look like in contrast?
An infinite player would ask, how do we serve customers so well that they never want to leave? Instead of, how do we beat Bank of America this quarter? The focus shifts from winning to worthiness, being worthy of continued trust and business.
Sinek argues this mindset shift has practical implications. What are the core practices that distinguish infinite players?
He identifies five essential practices. First is having a just cause, a vision of the future that's bigger than just making money. This isn't a mission statement on a wall, but a deeply held belief about advancing something meaningful.
Can you give us a concrete example of what a just cause looks like?
Patagonia's just cause is we're in business to save our home planet. That's not about selling more jackets. It's about using business as a force for environmental good. It guides every decision they make, from materials to supply chains to activism.
How is that different from typical corporate vision statements?
Most vision statements are finite. Be the number one provider or maximize shareholder value. A just cause is idealistic and unachievable in the finite sense. You never fully save the planet, so you keep working toward it infinitely.
The second practice Sinek identifies is building trusting teams. How does infinite thinking change how leaders approach team dynamics?
Infinite leaders create what Sinek calls a circle of safety, an environment where people feel psychologically safe to take risks, admit mistakes, and prioritize the team's success over individual advancement.
That sounds nice in theory, but how do you actually build that kind of trust?
It starts with leaders admitting their own fallibility. When a leader says, "I made a mistake," or "I don't know," it gives everyone else permission to be human. Finite leaders pretend they have all the answers because they're trying to win.
Sinek uses some military examples here. What can civilian leaders learn from how elite military units build trust?
In the military, your life literally depends on your teammates, so they invest heavily in building trust before anything else. They train together, eat together, struggle together. The shared hardship creates bonds that make individual ego secondary to group success.
How does that translate to a corporate environment?
I've seen companies create trust exercises that are just games. But real trust comes from going through genuine challenges together. Working late on a crisis, celebrating failures as learning, having leaders take responsibility when things go wrong.
The third practice is studying worthy rivals. This seems counterintuitive. Shouldn't you be trying to beat competitors?
Finite players see competitors as enemies to defeat. Infinite players see certain competitors as worthy rivals who make them better. The rivalry isn't about winning, it's about mutual improvement toward your just cause.
Can you walk us through how this works in practice?
Look at Apple and Samsung. Despite lawsuits and competition, they also collaborate. Samsung makes components for iPhones. Each company's innovations push the other to improve. The rivalry advances smartphone technology for everyone.
So how should a leader identify and engage with worthy rivals?
A worthy rival is someone playing the same infinite game better than you in some dimension. Instead of trying to destroy them, you study what makes them effective and use that to improve your own game.
This requires a pretty significant ego check for most leaders, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Finite thinking feeds ego. We're the best, they're the enemy. Infinite thinking requires humility. What can we learn from how they serve their just cause? It's much harder psychologically, but much more valuable strategically.
The fourth practice is preparing for existential flexibility. What does Senec mean by this?
It's the willingness to fundamentally change your business model, strategy, or operations when necessary to continue serving your just cause. Finite players resist change because it threatens their current winning strategy.
The example that comes to mind is Netflix. Can you walk us through how they demonstrate existential flexibility?
Netflix started mailing DVDs, then shifted to streaming, then became a content creator. Each transition threatened their existing success, but they made the changes to serve their just cause of revolutionizing entertainment access.
What made those transitions possible when other companies in similar situations failed to adapt?
Their just cause wasn't be the best DVD by mail company. It was about making entertainment more accessible and enjoyable. When new technology offered better ways to serve that cause, they embraced the change even at great cost.
How can leaders build this flexibility into their organizations before they need it?
Start by clarifying your just cause versus your current business model. If your cause is deeper than your current methods, you're more likely to see necessary changes as opportunities rather than threats.
The fifth practice is demonstrating the courage to lead. How does infinite thinking change what leadership courage looks like?
Finite leaders show courage by taking risks to win. Infinite leaders show courage by doing the right thing for the just cause, even when it hurts short-term results. This often means disappointing shareholders or stakeholders who want quick wins.
Can you give us a specific example of this kind of courageous leadership?
When CVS stopped selling tobacco products, they gave up $2 billion in annual revenue. Finite thinking said that was insane. They were losing to competitors who kept selling cigarettes. But their just cause was helping people live healthier lives.
How did that decision play out for them?
It reinforced their credibility as a health company, not just a convenience store. They could pursue partnerships and services that competitors couldn't because of this authentic commitment to health. The short-term loss enabled long-term positioning.
Now let's get practical. If someone listening leads a team or organization, where do they start applying these ideas?
Start by examining your current metrics and incentives. If everything you measure is finite, quarterly results, competitive rankings, individual performance, you're probably encouraging finite thinking without realizing it.
What would infinite metrics look like instead?
You'd measure things like employee retention, customer lifetime value, innovation pipeline, community, impact. These indicate whether you're building something sustainable rather than just winning temporarily.
Let's say someone realizes their company lacks a clear just cause. How do they develop one?
Ask your team why the organization exists beyond making money. What problem are you solving? What would be missing from the world if your company disappeared tomorrow? The answers usually point toward a just cause.
How do you know if you've identified a genuine just cause versus just a nice-sounding mission statement?
A real just cause feels bigger than your current capabilities. It should inspire people to work toward something they might never fully achieve. If your cause feels achievable in the next few years, it's probably too small.
What about building trusting teams? If someone inherits a team that's been operating with finite thinking, how do they shift the culture?
Start with your own behavior. Admit when you don't know something. Ask for help. Take responsibility for failures and share credit for successes. People watch what you do much more than what you say.
How long does it typically take to see this cultural shift take hold?
Real trust builds slowly. You might see small changes in a few months, but deep cultural shifts take years. The key is consistency. You can't fake infinite thinking during tough quarters and expect people to believe it.
What's the biggest mistake leaders make when trying to identify worthy rivals?
They pick obvious competitors instead of organizations that truly challenge them to be better. Your worthy rival might be in a completely different industry, but serving a similar just cause more effectively than you.
Can you give us an example of a non-obvious worthy rival relationship?
A hospital might study Disney as a worthy rival for patient experience, not other hospitals. Disney's mastery of customer journey and emotional design could teach healthcare leaders things that studying competitor hospitals never would.
When it comes to existential flexibility, how do leaders know when it's time for fundamental change versus staying the course?
Ask whether your current approach is still the best way to serve your just cause. If external changes mean you could serve that cause better with a different model, it's time to adapt. If your current model still serves best, stay focused.
What stops most organizations from making these necessary changes?
Sunk cost thinking and fear of cannibalizing current success. They'd rather optimize a declining model than risk disrupting profitable operations. But infinite players understand that self-disruption is better than being disrupted by others.
Let's talk about the courage to lead. How do leaders build the internal fortitude to make decisions that serve the just cause but hurt short-term results?
Surround yourself with people who share the just cause and will support you during difficult decisions. If you're the only one who cares about infinite thinking, you'll cave to finite pressure every time.
What about dealing with stakeholders who demand finite results? Investors, board members, customers expecting immediate value?
Communicate the long-term logic behind your decisions. Show how infinite thinking has worked for other organizations. Most importantly, deliver results consistently over time so you build credibility for when you need to make unpopular choices.
If someone can only implement one aspect of infinite thinking, which would you recommend?
Start with clarifying your just cause. Everything else flows from that. Without a clear cause, the other practices are just techniques. With a compelling cause, the rest becomes much more natural and necessary.
Now, let's step back and evaluate the book critically. What does Sinek do really well in The Infinite Game?
He provides a simple but powerful framework for thinking differently about competition and success. The finite versus infinite distinction is genuinely useful for diagnosing problems with short-term thinking.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
Sinek makes infinite thinking sound easier than it actually is. He doesn't fully address how difficult it is to maintain infinite principles when facing genuine existential threats or when stakeholders demand finite results.
How does this book compare to other work on long-term thinking in business?
It's more accessible than academic work like Built to Last or Good to Great, but less rigorous in its research. Sinek is better at inspiration than methodology. You'll need other books for detailed implementation guidance.
What important aspects of organizational leadership does this book leave out?
He doesn't adequately address the role of systems, processes, and structures in supporting infinite thinking. Culture matters, but so do compensation systems, performance reviews, and organizational design.
Where should readers go to fill those gaps?
Look at books like Reinventing Organizations by Frederick Laloux for structural changes, or The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz for dealing with the practical challenges Sinek glosses over.
How has this book influenced business thinking since its publication?
It's given leaders language to justify long-term thinking and stakeholder-oriented decisions. I see more executives talking about purpose beyond profit, though whether behavior has really changed is still unclear.
What criticism has the book received?
Some critics argue it's too idealistic and doesn't account for competitive realities. Others say the finite-infinite distinction oversimplifies complex strategic situations where you need both mindsets.
Do you think those criticisms are fair?
Partially. The framework is a starting point, not a complete strategy. But I think the idealism is actually valuable. It pushes leaders to think beyond what seems immediately practical.
Has anything significant changed since 2019 that affects how we should read this book?
The pandemic and recent economic volatility have actually made infinite thinking more relevant. Companies that focused only on short-term efficiency struggled more than those with stronger purpose, culture, and stakeholder relationships.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important insight listeners should take from The Infinite Game?
The game you think you're playing determines every decision you make. If you believe business is about winning, you'll make different choices than if you believe it's about contributing value over time.
And if someone does just one thing differently after this conversation?
Question whether your current goals are finite or infinite. Are you trying to beat someone else or build something worthy of lasting? That shift in perspective changes everything else.
Elena Rodriguez, thanks for helping us think more infinitely about The Infinite Game. This has been genuinely useful.
Thanks, Marcus. Keep playing The Infinite Game.